Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Episode 223 of the Read to Lead podcast is brought to you in part by Self Publishing School and by FreshBooks. Get a free copy of Chandler Bolt's book published when you sign up for free training on how to go from blank page to published author in as little as 90 days. Visit readtoleadpodcast.com/published to get your free copy now. And for 30 days, you can use FreshBooks cloud accounting software absolutely free. Get access to all of their features, and you don't even need a credit card to take advantage of their free trial. To find out more, freshbooks.com/readtolead.
You can get rid of your consumer debt. That's the first thing, because it just frees you up. It frees up mental space. And when you don't need to make as much money, you're able to do the work you really want to do. When your month starts and you don't owe anything, it's really fun to do business that way.
Hi, and welcome to the Read to Lead podcast. Can you believe it? Next week marks the fifth anniversary of this show. It's the podcast dedicated to your personal and your professional growth. My name is Jeff Brown, having served as host for the last 5 years and continuing to do so as long as you'll have me. And I believe that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, that intentional and consistent reading is an absolute must. We're not only going to help you narrow this important reading list, but bring you the key insights and main ideas from some of today's most successful and inspiring authors and their books. Today, you and I get to sit down with a guy who's become a friend here as of late. His name is Vincent Puglisi. He's the author of the book Freelance to Freedom, the roadmap for creating a side business to achieve financial, time, and life freedom. I plan to ask Vincent to share about how to take the first steps toward a life of freedom, tips for dealing with the inevitable haters that come along the way, ways to keep your money from controlling you, and much, much more. As I read Vincent's book, I realized that he learned early on how to keep his money from controlling him. It's a lesson I had to learn early on in my business. Thankfully, it's a lesson that didn't take too awfully long, because very early in my business, I began incorporating a cloud accounting software solution called FreshBooks. That was nearly 10 years ago, and I've never considered using anybody else, any other software, to track the funds going into and out of my business. In other words, I wouldn't change a thing, and I highly recommend you consider FreshBooks, especially if you're thinking about some of the things that Vincent is going to be talking to us about today, starting your own side business, for example. I don't have enough time to go into all the things that FreshBooks can do for you, but that's okay, because you can try FreshBooks and all of FreshBooks' features free for 30 days. It's that free 30-day trial you've probably heard me talk about before. When you go to freshbooks.com/readtolead and enter read to lead in the how did you hear about it section, you get access to all those features with no credit card required at all, no obligation whatsoever. Just try it out and see if you like it. You've got nothing to lose. Again, that address, freshbooks.com/readtolead. Now, Vincent, like today's guest and like next week's guest and like a guest I had on a couple of weeks ago, is a first-time author. Every time I interview a first-time author, they're telling me about the impact writing a book has had on their livelihood, on their business. If that's something you've ever considered doing, you know how difficult it can be. Well, I want to help you with that. More specifically, my friend Chandler Bolt and I want to help you with that. Chandler is the founder of Self Publishing School, which is an online education company dedicated to helping people like you get your book idea out of your head and onto paper as quickly as possible, and then getting your published book into the hands of as many people, as many readers as possible. Right now, he's offering free training that comes along with a free copy of his book published. He's been a guest on this show to talk about that very book. It's got several hundred ratings and reviews on Amazon. It's a $15 book. Chandler's going to send it to you for free, and all you have to do is register for his free training. In that training, he's going to show you the exact process to follow to go from blank page to published author in as little as 90 days, and the exact launch blueprint to follow to launch your book in such a way that you're earning monthly income month after month, residual income, monthly recurring revenue. To register for this free training and get a copy of Chandler's book published right now, all you need to do is go to readtoleadpodcast.com/published. That's readtoleadpodcast.com/published. Vincent Puglisi has been a professional photojournalist for about 24 years, having been assigned to photograph, four presidents, nearly every major sporting event, including multiple Super Bowls, the World Series, NHL Finals, the NCAA Final Four, and just about everything in between. His work has been published in most major newspapers, magazines, and online publications around the world. He now coaches and leads small business owners and freelancers toward a life of time, money, and work freedom. His new book is called Freelance to Freedom, the Roadmap for Creating a Side Business to Achieve Financial Time and Life Freedom. I'm thrilled to have him here. Vincent, welcome.
Thanks so much, buddy. That was fantastic. I appreciate that.
Well, Vincent and I have been connected on Facebook for a while, but had a chance to meet in person just a couple of months ago. And I'm not even sure that his book was on my radar, but after that conversation, I became aware that he wrote a book, and I was immediately intrigued by the title, and it's a subject that's near and dear to me. I want to start, though, this being your first book, Vincent, by asking you what the process of writing was like for you. I hear it's kind of hard.
It's funny because, I got published through Morgan James. David Hancock is the publisher, and I listened to him on an interview talk about, like, how do you get published with Morgan James? And he gave this whole rundown of the outline and everything to do. And I was laughing as I listened to it because I realized I did everything the exact opposite of what he would have said to do. I didn't have an outline. I had these stories and I had this idea and I had this title in my head for a couple of years. And literally we were on vacation. My wife and we have three boys. And I must have been talking about it. I can do this. I can talk about the same thing over and over again. And she said to me, Elizabeth said, okay, I'm taking the boys to the beach. I want you to go to the coffee shop and start writing the book. I'm tired of you talking about it. That's literally how the book started. So I just started writing a story or two that I thought fit in, and then kind of started just kind of mapping it out from there. What's missing? Where do I want this to go? So it really was an organic process that had no plan to it when I did it.
So do you think by doing everything the opposite of the way it was quote unquote supposed to be done helped you stand out? Is that why it worked?
I do think that has something to do with it because there was no formula. There was no seven steps to this or, you know, here's the top bullet points to this. It was really just me laying out my heart and struggles. And what also, which, you know, I was talking to Pat Flynn about this, which is really funny because he asked me about this. And I said, I was going through an adrenal fatigue when I wrote this book. I was literally tired all day and not sleeping at night. So I would wake up first thing in the morning and I would just write because I was in so much pain. Mm. I was so tired. And it really just allowed me to write things I just hadn't thought about. And now when I look at the book, I go, oh, I can't believe I wrote that. I can't believe I published that. Because it wasn't really thinking like, oh, this is actually going to be a book that anybody's going to read. I thought my mom was going to read it, my wife would read it, and that would be it. And now I'm like, somebody will say, oh, that story. I'm like, oh, you read that. Like, I was in the book. I forgot about that. So literally that was my mindset when I was going through it. So I wouldn't recommend anybody go through adrenal fatigue while writing a book, but it kind of helped me.
And then you've got additional stories and then stories from the book that you expand upon sort of as bonuses on your website. Is that correct?
Yeah, I started realizing there's more to this. And there's more just funny things that happen or interesting. You know, because you go through a book and it's like 73,000 words, but you realize, oh man, there's things in there that were holes that weren't, there's stories that really would have helped. So there's that too. So yeah.
Well, Vincent divides the book into two parts. Part one is how he did this, his journey from freelance to freedom. Part two is how you can do it. I want to start, Vincent, with part one. So I want to ask you to tell me about a time in your life, or the time in your life, I should say, when you began to turn things around, that period you talk about in the book during your early 30s, when you and your wife decided to get serious about your financial future.
Yeah, we were your typical kind of employees. We were newspaper photographers. This was our dream job. Mm. Like the story behind that was like, I struggled. Like I graduated from high school. I found out the day before graduation that I was graduate. I was a terrible student. Never cared. Never paid attention. Didn't want to do it. I knew there was something else, but I didn't know what that thing was. So that's confusing to everybody around you, right? And my brother's like, I was so worried about you. I'm like, I wasn't. I knew this wasn't it, but I was confused of what would it be. So I struggled for years. I think I had 5 or 6 majors in college. And so I went through and I started with photography. You know, my dad helped me with that. And then I finally got in. I was in New York freelancing. I was doing big events. Like I'd photographed the president, the Dalai Lama, and you know, all these big sporting events, but it wasn't making any money. Mm. So that's when Chuck Bennett, who was my photo editor at Newsday, said, go back to school, go to Ohio University. It was a great journalism school. Went there, got the degree, met my wife there, and we got these newspaper jobs, which was my dream. I get to shoot every day and get paid for it. So, I was in this kind of la-la land, but I was only making $32,000 a year. But, you know, for a broke person, that was a lot of money. So I was like, okay, I get to do what I want to do. And I was in Evansville, not far from Indy, so I got to go up and cover the Colts and all that type of stuff. It was a lot of fun. But within the same year, I had won International Sports Photographer of the Year, like number one. Mm. And the second place was a guy from LA Times. Third place was a guy from Sydney, Australia. Okay, something's happening here. Mm. And at the same time, Elizabeth was pregnant with our first son, Andrew. But I'm making $32,000 a year, and my wife wants to stay home if she can with Andrew. So that was the first like adult moment. So I had my evaluation of my job, and I went in. And he praised everything that I did. He was, you're working above and beyond. You're winning all these awards. You get flown to DC to Geographic for the award ceremony for the sports photography, blah blah blah. But we don't have any budget. So most people are getting no raise. We're going to give you 3%. Like we tried for 4, but we can only give you 3. And I just remember sitting there like, I can't, what am I going to do? Like, I can't live like this. Mm. I'm not going to be able to raise a family. And I looked out in the newsroom and I saw everybody and I kind of realized like, oh my God, everybody's always complaining about money and struggling with time and this and that. And I said right then and there, I'm like, this is over. I was so angry. I'm like, I'm never going to be able to do this. So I left there and I called my dad literally to see if I could work with him because he had a business back in New York that I used to work for when I was, a teenager. And he turned me down. So even my dad's turning me down. And he said to me something that changed my life. Mm. And I use this with everybody that I work with now. And he said to me, he goes, I've been telling you for years to start your own business. He goes, you never listened to me. You wanted security and the benefits and all that type of stuff. But you're a really good photographer now. I didn't used to be. Like now you are. And he goes, but you are settling for $32,000 a year and benefits. And he said, you have a talent and a skill now that you can go out and do weddings, commercial work, corporate. You can do all these different things that you actually do for the newspaper, but on your own and make 10 times more money and control your time. And he goes, you have a skill, but you're not using it correctly. Mm. And that one line changed my life. And I was finally desperate enough to listen because I'm sure he gave me a lot of great advice before. I just didn't listen. So that day we decided to start our business.
Well, was part of that hesitation based in fear? Because I think back to the story of when you were young and your dad had that partner who at one point kind of left him high and dry, and you experienced just how difficult that was for your family as a young boy. Did that play into your not wanting to start your own business at all in the back of your mind?
I think it's a great question because I think it probably did. Mm. I always thought, because I always wanted to be more like my dad. He was the entrepreneur. My mom had the steady government job with the benefits. She always talked about that. And I always never wanted to be that, but I was living that. Mm. And he had went through it. I mean, $135,000 in 1985, they wiped out of the account. And I mean, literally we were broke in a night. Mm. And my dad had to do, months of depression. And he had to borrow money from me when I was 15. I mean, how hard is that?
Oh, wow.
But he bounced back. And 6 years later, they not only built the business back to where it was before, but they had paid off all their debt, including their house. So it was very inspirational to me, but I forgot about that. You know, I was arrogant at 19. I knew everything, right. So it wasn't until you really go through it and you hit bottom and you really have to make a decision that I listened to him and he was absolutely right. I was like, I need to go do this. So that's how it started.
And fast forward a few years and counting your house and some cars and some credit cards and maybe some student loans and you're $140,000 in debt, as I recall.
Almost exactly the same number that he was.
Yeah. And you managed to I think it was 4 years to completely pay that off.
Yeah. So what we did was you know, we were following the Dave Ramsey plan, and I had caught on more than Elizabeth did. She was much more hesitant. And I think a lot of spouses go through this. Mm. One's on board. One's like, yeah, I don't want to change my lifestyle and blah, blah, blah. Finally, she read Dave Ramsey's book, Total Money Makeover, got on board with it. And we decided to do a crazy thing. We said, she's going to leave the job and be home with Andrew. That's the way we wanted to live our life. I'm going to work at the newspaper job. I'm not quitting as much as I want to. I'm not quitting. But we're going to live off of my salary. And we're going to build this business, and we're going to build it well. And with the money from the business, we are going to pay off all of our debt, including our house. And when that's there, I will quit my job. We will be free. And we could run the business exactly the way that we want with no, you know, no desperation and no doing it the way we don't want to do it. That was our plan. So going about it that way gave me the inspiration. And 3.5 years later, we had paid off everything and I had quit.
Now, I want to get into in just a moment the phases you walk the reader through on how they can sort of shift from maybe working for somebody else to starting their own business. Before I do that, though, I want to sort of springboard on what you just talked about. Share, if you would, some of the pushback you received, oftentimes from some well-meaning people in your life, toward your desire to live without debt. And how did you deal with that along the way?
Yeah, it's a great question because we dealt with it much more than I realized we would. Mm. I'm a defiant person by nature. Like, if you tell me I can't do something, I will go do it. So that never bothered me. Like, that was inspiring to me when people didn't believe that we could do it. What was sad was people believed you shouldn't do it. They were like, well, you're just always going to have debt. Mm. I mean, family members. So that's just life. And I said, that's not the life that we want. And like, you'll see. And when somebody tells me you'll see, I'm like, you're about to lose. You're gonna. I don't care. Even if I don't want to do it, I'm going to do it because I'm going to, you know. So we dealt with, I mean, close family members that and friends and people and coworkers. So just imagine we're cutting back more. We're not going out to lunch with everybody like we did every day. And you start getting comments and you start getting the, oh, you only live once. And all I kept thinking was, yeah, in a couple of years, we'll be able to do whatever we want. Hmm. And I knew if we kept doing this, we would just be in the same kind of purgatory. And if purgatory is you only live once, I don't want to be there. So we just accepted it. We took on that role. We used it kind of as a badge, you know, badge of honor. Like, yep, that's what we're doing. And if you're going to make fun of our cars, we're probably not going to be hanging out anyway, because it's not the type of situation we want to get involved with. We want, you know, to be around people that get it and that understand, like, money isn't, you know, us spending more than we have isn't going to be the best thing for us. And if you don't get that, then that's cool. But you know, we did get a lot of pushback from it. Mm.
So since that time of having a negative net worth to a few years later being debt free, fast forward a few years after that, and Vincent and Elizabeth were able to create, I think it was 7 figures in net worth, and never at any time did they make more than, I think, $130,000 in any one year, and there were a couple of years in there where it was 5 figures, right?
Yeah. Many of them, yeah. It's just the power of what you do with your money.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I think people think, y'all have to make this much to do it. It's like, no, if you put this away, you invest it, you pay off your debt. Because the thing is, I mean, getting into the numbers, the amount of money we pay on a mortgage just from interest, like from the interest point of view, you could buy another house with that.
Right.
So if you pay it off really quickly, that's, you know, depending on your mortgage, that could be an extra $700 a month that you're just giving to them for a tax deduction. You get a couple of that back. So you're able to really take advantage of your money a lot quicker and then use that money and invest it in whether it's in yourself, which we do a lot of, or you're investing things that are going to quickly escalate and increase your income, increase your net worth. So basically reducing your taxable income a ton, like investing in things like solo 401k. You could just drop a whole lot of money in there, reduce your taxable income while you're building wealth. And I think that's lost when you have car payments, house payments, you know, all that type of stuff. I think that's not taught in school at all.
Oh,
and
no.
When we figured that out, you know, rich dad, poor dad, it was eye-opening to us.
My wife and I haven't had car payments, I guess, for probably about 10 years, and I would never go back to having car payments for sure.
But it's hard, right? Because you get so everybody has it. So they're like, what, are you crazy? Like, of course you'd have it. And so it's just nice to be weird. And we're even teaching our kids, like, our oldest, he's so into bugs. It's his life. He reads about it. And he told me the other day, like, he has friends like, oh, you're weird. He goes, thank you. I'm like, yes, that's the perfect answer.
That's right. Well, for others looking to have total time freedom, Vincent, is being debt free an absolute must, or is it essentially about keeping your money from controlling you?
It's a little bit of both. I don't think it's an absolute must. I hedge on the mortgage when people, I know people that will get consumer debt free, and then they will go crazy on the mortgage, which we did. But our mortgage wasn't that high compared to what a lot of people are dealing with now. And this is 14 years ago. And we're in Southern Indiana. It wasn't as expensive. When somebody tells me they're going to go crazy on the mortgage at the sacrifice of like building their business, or for instance, like going to great conferences, stuff like that. Like, no, you like that. I have to invest in that stuff. So I go back and forth. Like, I am not gung ho, like go crazy on all your debt, including your more, like if you can get rid of your consumer debt, that's first thing, because it just frees you up. It frees up mental space. And when you don't need to make as much money, you're able to do the work you really want to do. I talk about it with my group. Like, we pay our bills in advance, and some people think we're crazy, but you don't understand, when your month starts and you don't owe anything, it's really fun to do business that way.
Wow. I love that.
If I have a client I don't want to work with, I could just tell them this is not working, and they either go, oh, okay, let's figure this out, or they go, and I'm fine either way.
Right.
But it's not going to continue where it's like, oh, I have to do this to pay the bills. Oh, no. Everybody says that. Well, you got to pay the bills. Well, what if you had no bills?
So it's a completely different story at that point. Well, this first phase that Vincent digs into, he calls escaping the seeds of discontent. And in this chapter, Vincent, you throw out some pretty telling statistics, things like 80% of workers today are dissatisfied with their jobs. Another stat, I think, is over the next 10 years, 50% of the workforce will be freelancers. Expound on those a little bit, if you would.
You're seeing it now just in terms of like the financial independence movements that are happening, that are growing like crazy around. People are realizing, I don't need to be in a job to earn income. This is not the way it was when, you know, I'm 46. We graduated from high school where you had to literally go up to a job with a paper, you know, application and wait for them to call you back. Like, you have a phone in your pocket that's more powerful than Ronald Reagan had in his office in 1980, right? You can start a business. So with that business and all of the stereotypes are crushed. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, black or white. Nobody knows who you are with your business. Like, there's nothing holding anybody back from doing something online to earn income. Now, if you could do it online to earn income, and you could reduce your debt, and you could increase your income to where your income goes above what you owe every month, you're now essentially financially free. Now, you're not wealthy, you're not Mark Cuban, but you can control your time and your money, and that's all that they want anyway. That's what most people want, is just the freedom to do what they want every day and do the work that they love. So like what we just talked about before, if you really enjoy your work, you don't need the money, you then get to really hone it and pivot towards, well, what kind of work do I want to do more? What do I want to eliminate? And every day you get to decide more and more about work gets better. Because now I don't want to do this, but I do want to do that. And when you don't need the money and you have the income coming, you could just decide to start. And I think so many people are just lost because they have the jobs that they have to go to and get on a train 6:30 in the morning. They hate. How do you start something when you're going through that and you're emotionally drained? So the quicker you could free yourself from that discontent in your work, the quicker you could start something and then move forward.
Yeah, and that's why you say, I think that you need to, phase two, the side hustle, you need to start that business before you really need the income that business is going to generate, right?
Exactly. Well, it's funny. I just had a retreat for my mastermind people, and we were about to talk about this, and I got a message that morning. And I hope he's not listening to, but a friend of mine works for a newspaper, and he messaged me, and he must have heard about my book, but he didn't read it, right? And he messaged me that morning. It was 8:15. And he said, hey, Vincent, you know, I just want to let you know, I just got laid off from my job. It's a newspaper job. And that's no shock. That's the way this world is going right now. And I want to learn more about freelancing. I need to start like immediately. Can we talk? And it's already, he's behind, because you have to start it before you need it. But most people, when they're in the jobs, they go, oh, it's good. It's good enough. I make 78 grand or whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's good. I hate it. You know, I hate my boss, but it's good enough. And then when that thing comes and it cuts you out from the legs, now the income is zero. Now you have to start. You haven't built your network. You haven't built your connections. You haven't started making content. You haven't done anything. And now you need to make all your mistakes when you need the money. And you're best making the mistakes when you don't need the money, because you get to be more authentic with it. So the point there is, build it before you need it.
Well, I can't say I did it because I was smart, but fortunate to have started a side business when I was still gainfully employed. And though I'm not still doing that work today, it was a godsend when I was pushed from the nest and needed to figure things out. I had something I could immediately lean into and make full time for a time until I figured out what I ultimately wanted to do long term.
how valuable for you, like what you went through, like the mistakes that you made that you weren't good at yet. Mm. Did that propel you to being better at it later?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny. I'll give talks occasionally and people will kind of look at me strange, cock their head to one side and say, look like you just kind of made a series of mistakes along the way. And that's basically what it is. It's like a series of firsts where I try different things and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And regardless, you learn every time.
And I think it's so vital to the conversation because like when you are starting your own business, I noticed the difference between employees and entrepreneurs, or let's just call them self-employed because not everybody's an entrepreneur. Mm. That's a whole different word. But when you have to start your own thing, you constantly have to make mistakes. You constantly have to relearn and change and pivot. When I was an employee, the thing was don't change. Don't rock the boat. So you make so many less mistakes because you need to keep the status quo. So when those people go out into the real world of self-employment, they're stunned by it because they don't want to make mistakes. Mm. They don't because they're afraid of getting in trouble. Like, no, you have to make as many mistakes as you possibly can without it being fatal. That's the key. So just don't make the fatal ones, but everything else, keep learning, make them then pivot 1% better constantly. But that's not the way it was when I was an employee or most of my friends. And the friends that are employees, they just worry about making the mistake and not realizing, no, you have to. That's the point. That's how you change and grow. When we were leaving the job, we had a friend that was like, aren't you worried about the uncertainty of being self-employed? And I said, and I was arrogant, right? And I was like, I kind of saw it coming. I said, well, we had 29 weddings booked and some corporate work. So we got 29 clients and some other corporate work. If one of them or two of them fires me, that's 5% of my income. And I can always replace them with somebody and it's probably going to be higher paid because we keep raising our prices. Mm. If one person fires you, you're done, down to zero.
Right.
And they were like, I never thought of it that way.
I much prefer the situation as it is now, just as you described. I don't have 29 clients. I don't want 29 clients at the moment. But yeah, I much prefer that than the alternative. And I used to be just like so many people, Vincent. I was taught, it was drilled in me at a young age, that this is security. This is the path that everybody goes down. And never was I encouraged, as so many people aren't, to think outside that box. It's like we're all these, robots being trained for, working for the factory line. So
the factory job, yeah. And the thing is, if you rock the boat in school, you are disrupting the entire system, and they can't have that.
Don't so get
they
me need started.
To, yeah. So you the people like you and I apparently, we might have great ideas, but they don't want to hear it because you are then changing their system, and then you make disorder in their school. And then you are, how do they control that? So they need to get those people out and keep the compliant ones in. And the compliant ones get the job that at 23 years old go, what do? Nobody's telling me what to do. Like, no, it's because you have to tell yourself what to do. Mm. And for 17 years, they've been told what to do and they're confused.
Well, you've hit on some of these. I think phase three is what Vincent calls the optimal freelancer. Vincent, what are some of the traits of someone who is in that phase?
Now it's improvement. Now you've gotten over the fear and the fright of starting your business, and you figured some money stuff out. And that's when you're doing things like, oh, my income's 100 grand. People don't realize this. If you have no debt and you're making $100,000, you could then put 30 grand into some retirement or investment vehicle that reduces your taxable income. When you do that consistently, you're paying less taxes, your health insurance could be lower. You're actually making more money by not having that. You get to control your money more. It's like Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He said, this really stunned me when I read this in that book. He said, employees make money, then they're taxed, and then they get the rest. Mm. Self-employed people make money, spend it in ways that can help their business, or maybe it's like even with me, we went on a book tour. Mm. That's all a tax deduction. That's all a write-off.
Right.
And then they pay taxes at the end of it. It's all legal. It's all the way the tax codes are written. But as employees, we're already kind of screwed. A big phrase of mine is better than yesterday, because so many times, like when you start a business, I don't even know what to do. What do I do about a website? It's overwhelming. The key is if you could wake up every day and you go, I need to be better than yesterday. Mm. I need to just figure something out that pushes the ball forward just a little bit farther. You keep doing that. There's just little things you start doing when you control your time and money more, that your prices go up. We have a thing called a golden day rule, which is basically when you, especially for freelancers, when you know you have busier times, you raise your rates during those dates or times and you test it only one at a time. Mm. But if you get that rate, you know you've been undercharging. If you don't get it, you know you need to increase your quality of work or your service. So you do that little by little, your rates keep going up. your debt goes down, your net worth goes up, and it makes you start freeing up a lot more time, because the more clients you take on, they're less amount of clients at more money. So now you have more time to think and come up with other income producing ideas. And that's where it goes forward from there. Then you have multiple streams of income where you're spending less time on it, just doing the work that you want to do. That's when life gets fun.
You know, I could attest to that. I have two streams of income today that involve monthly recurring revenue that a year and a half ago in my business didn't exist.
Yep.
And I just created them one day and said, you know, I don't have any monthly recurring revenue in my business. It's, you know, it's up and down, up and down. It's solid, but there's peaks and valleys, and I want to change that. I want there to be a base. And over the course of a few months, I created two streams that didn't exist before out of thin air.
Just made it up.
And that now have the supply a base of solid income every single month. It's amazing that more people aren't doing this.
But you see, I think there's a confidence thing. You now have the confidence, oh, I can do this. I've never done this before. Once you've done it once or twice, like for instance, with us, we have Total Life Freedom, which is our mastermind and our membership site that we're building. Mm. But I also have people asking me, like, photography wise, I'm like, Right. Well, I hate teaching photography. I don't want to teach f-stops, but I will teach you the business of photography, which is not much different than when we teach the other stuff, but it's specific towards photographers and artists. So we just made that up. We just created the Business of Photography Academy, and we just opened it this month, and we have six people that just joined. Mm-hmm. And the potential for it's unlimited.
Right.
But we're teaching the same methods, and I can bring people in to help teach. It's like, oh, this is an income stream that hadn't even thought about, and now it's created and it's earning income just like that. Mm. And that keeps happening over and over and over again.
Well, phase four is what Vincent calls a life of freedom. Talk a bit about this phase, Vincent, and why you say to expect some haters along the way.
I never had to deal with this before because I was never successful for a good portion of my life. But when you start doing things, you get people saying things like, you might have heard, oh, must be nice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Must be nice to be able to travel for 3 months with your family out west. I'm like, it is nice. But they say it in a way that's like, I'm envious or I'm jealous or people are good. I'm like, no, it's the overnight success that took 12 years to get there.
Right.
It's the type of thing where it's like, no, we worked for this, but people that aren't doing it, when they see you doing it, a lot of times are going to either be envious. And I was there and I still am there. You know, I'll be honest, like I think we're doing well, but I'll see people doing the other things. I'm like, we're not doing that. So do I either cut them down or do I get kind of like inspired, like, oh, I can do that. Or that's not really the life that I want. It's cool for them, but that's not what I want to do. You know, I don't want to be Gary Vee. As much as I admire what he does, I don't want to be him. And I don't want to work 16 hours a day away from my kids. So, but that's great for him. So you're going to get a lot of hate. You're going to get people that kind of criticize. And that's why you've got to build it for the people that are right for you and work with the right people. And that's optimizing it even more.
Mm. I was giving a talk a couple of weeks ago, and I wouldn't necessarily categorize this person as a hater, but at the end of the talk, and I was giving a talk to podcasters on leveraging your podcast for various streams of income, as we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He says, well, you know, you've got X number of listeners or whatever. What about those of us who don't have any? And my immediate response was, well, I didn't have any either. as you said before, you know, I just approached every day as trying to be better than I was the day before and try new things and see what works and move on from what doesn't. But it was as if his thinking was, well, that works for you because you have all these listeners. Well, I didn't in the beginning. I didn't have any.
If you have one listener, are you asking him what you can do better? Right?
Right.
If you have one listener, what do they want? Make it better. Because if you get, it's just the whole, you know, 1,000 true fans, Kevin Kelly. If you have 1,000 true fans that pay you $100 a year, you're going to be fine. If you have 100 true fans that pay you $1,000 a year, you're going to be fine. It's like you don't need that many numbers. I mean, we've built this and this is very profitable. And we only have 400 people in our Facebook group. It's not very big, but it's a concentrated group of like-minded people that get it. And I'm not selling to them. I'm adding stuff that they want, and then they want this other stuff.
Mm.
You don't need a whole lot of people to do. Everybody's so concerned with the numbers. I want 10,000 people on Instagram, but the more you scale, and I believe this, and I'll get pushback probably from some of your listeners of the entrepreneur, the more you scale, the less personal connection you have.
I would say that's true. Yeah.
So I love the personal connection. I actually love helping the people. Some people want it to be, that's great, but want it to be scaled. I don't right now. I could see it scaling once I can't do this for people the way that I want, or creating products. It's like, okay, you can't get into the masterminds, but we have this thing or that thing. I could see that down the road, but concentrate on building raving fans first before you worry about scaling.
Something I started about a year and a half ago was what I call Read to Lead University, which is essentially a book club where Read to Lead listeners and I meet once a month and walk through together a book that we've been reading that month. There's a private Facebook group. They get a magazine-style book summary midway through. And I've often had other internet entrepreneurs say, aren't you going to grow that? Don't you want, 100, 200, 300, 500 people in that group? There's about 60 or 70 in it. And to me, I love the fact that I feel like I've got a personal connection with every one of those people. If there were many more, if it were even just double what it is now, if it was 120, let's say, that would be really tough. Mm-hmm. I like the intimacy that is there when we have those meetings every month. And there's this core group of people involved. I just had coffee with one who was in town a couple of days ago. And so it's been really neat to see how that's evolved, and I would just love it to stay right, just like it is.
And that you're going to get pushback from the entrepreneurs of the world. No, you should be scaling this, right?
Right.
But like in that book, The Power of Moments, they talk about responsiveness, and that's why people leave businesses, lack of responsiveness. That's why people leave jobs. And I love being responsive. Now that is not scalable, right? That is, right. I love being able to respond to, being on the calls with my people, not outsourcing that. People are going to say it's not scalable, but what do we really want? I really want to impact people one-on-one and personally, the right people. I don't know. I've been around enough people where it's scaled that it doesn't bring any more happiness to me. I've seen it. I've seen, whether it's in the sports world or in this world, I'm not playing it down at all. It's just not for me at this point. I love this way of building it, which is one at a time, person by person.
Yeah. Well, something that began happening to me, I would say a couple of years ago, Vincent, was occasionally realizing that I didn't know what day of the week it was. It's such an amazing feeling, because when I worked for somebody else, there was never a time when I didn't know exactly what day it was.
Yeah, or time.
Talk about how in phase five, essentially every day is what you call Independence Day.
Yeah, we just went through it, which is funny. It was the real Independence Day.
Exactly.
We've had from the very beginning, even when the income was very much lower, we have three boys now. They're 12, 10, and 7. And Dylan wasn't born yet. I think Andrew was maybe 3. Nolan was 1. And we had just left the job. And we were at the park and we were feeding ducks. And I said to Andrew, I said, what day is it? He goes, I don't know. And I said to Elizabeth, I said, what's today? She said, I don't know. And I said, oh, my goodness. We don't even know. Like, this is wonderful. It was a Thursday. It turned out to be a Thursday, but we didn't know. And it was just phenomenal. Now Tuesday and Wednesday are my big work days now. That's where I do my mastermind calls and like that. But aside from that, we've built it to where it can be whatever day. We do what we want. We do what we want in the days that we want. And that's the life that we wanted. We wanted to be able to, if we want to pick up and go a couple hours away to the lake, we go. And I could do work from there, or we don't have any work. But the point is to do the work that I love doing. I think what gets lost in this is I did it to where, this was before I wrote the book, it was kind of empty. The reason why I left the photography world for the most part was it was really about me. It was about the assignments that I wanted to do, about the shoots, that my pictures. Even though it was for somebody else, it felt empty. It got to the point where it was empty for me because I felt like I was behind the camera and I wanted to be not in front of the camera, but I wanted to be talking to people. Here's what happened to me, which was really funny, was we were shooting a wedding and I was eating dinner with the DJ, in between the dancing. And he's telling me how his business is struggling. So we're sitting there for 45 minutes and I'm coaching him on this. This was 6 years ago. And I didn't want to go out and shoot. I wanted to keep talking to him. But I've got to go shoot the reception. And that's what, that night I was like, I don't know if this is for me anymore.
Wow.
And we didn't quit the photography world at that point, but that's when I started coaching. And that's what I love to do. So it's like, I could do that 7 days a week. I'd love it, but I also want the freedom to be able to do what I want to do.
Yeah. You realize in that conversation that what really got the juices flowing was teaching other people what you'd learned.
That's exactly right. But it's so counterintuitive because all my friends are photographers. Like, nobody does that. And you should be sure. Aren't you worried about the next? And like, no, this is, I don't even know how to make money with this if I can, but I love doing this.
Well, I have a couple of questions I want to ask you, Vincent, not directly related to the book. Before I do that, though, is there anything else from the book you want to make sure we walk away with?
No, this is fantastic. Appreciate this.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I know you love to read, so I want you to think about the books you've read over the last few years. What are the two or three titles that immediately come to mind as having had the biggest impact on you?
Oh, wow. I keep reading Essentialism.
Okay.
I think it's so vital to me. I just mentioned The Power of Moments. I read that. I love their way of thinking. That book really helped me. I always read The Choice by Og Mandino. My friend Ken Carfagno mentioned that to me. It's about a writer that kind of lost his way from the success of it and the story within it. So I read that just as a checkpoint for me as a husband and as a dad and as why I'm doing this. So those three books are the first ones that jump out to me.
I've read another Og Mandino book. I have not read that one. So I'll put that on my list for sure. Do you do any public speaking on a regular basis?
It's ramping up more. I've got one in September and one in August. I had in the past. I did Toastmasters a couple of years back, and it was good and bad at the same time. I kind of felt myself being in a little bit of a box with it, so I kind of slowed down in that. But yeah, I'm starting to get the inquiries and the requests for it now.
Dan Pink and I were just talking about TED Talks and how he feels that everybody's talks are turning into TED Talks, and they're all kind of looking and sounding the same because everybody's being told that this is the pinnacle. This is how you need to do it.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to know, and this is a question I ask just about everybody we have here on the show, what tips you would share and that you've learned along the way for delivering a talk that's impactful and a talk that's memorable?
For me, it's letting down the guard and being authentic. It's not a list. It's not, it's telling stories, it's being open. Like I was very fortunate. Seth Godin endorsed my book and I loved what he said. He goes, useful lessons from the trenches. And I read that and I said, that's where I want to be. I said, I don't want to be on a platform. I know Michael Hyatt, it's the platform. Everyone wants, I don't want to be on a platform. I want to be in the trenches. So I want to be with the people on this. And I think if I ever lost that, it would be inauthentic to me. The number one thing that I've heard about my book is it's relatable. And that means a lot to me because I want it to be related. And I want the same thing in terms of a present, just to be authentic and be relatable and not be, I'm not a guru. I'm trying to figure this out just like everybody else. Because no matter what you do, there's the next struggle ahead of you to learn. Now I'm learning this next phase. So this whole thing, like people comparing each other, I think it's really dangerous. Like, oh, they've got but they've been doing this for 14 years. You just started in January. Like, relax, just keep working. And I think so many people in the instant world now, it's like, oh, I want to have this. And I think it's inauthentic and I think it's empty in a lot of ways. So I do think just being yourself, being generous, being authentic, and telling your real stories as vulnerable and as uncomfortable as it could be. I think for me, that's a key part.
Well, I got to ask if you're willing to share it. How does one get someone of Seth Godin's caliber to endorse their book?
I get that question a lot lately. And it's funny because I joke. I say, well, the most important name of the book isn't mine on the cover. And it comes down to all the stuff we're talking about. Like, I support Seth Godin and what he does in his work. He has helped me. And then I got to meet him about 5 years ago at a conference in New York City with Dave Ramsey and Gary Vaynerchuk. And so there was that. So little by little, and I didn't keep in touch, but I followed his stuff and I shared his stuff and I recommend it to everybody because I believe in it. And then a couple of years ago, he's in New York again. And my buddy Ken and I went. And I have two rules when I go to a conference. If I can, sit in the front row and ask at least one question. That's a rule that I have. So he was, and the book was being published. And I knew that he's a freelance type of guy. I knew that he had connections in some way with my book publisher. So I made sure the question that I asked was related to that. And it was a real question. I said to him, I said, Seth, in 3 years, I'm publishing a book, Freelance to Freedom by Morgan James, blah, blah, blah. And so hopefully that could be recognizable to him. And I said, what mistake am I going to make now that 3 years from now, I wish I would have known? And he laughed and he said that you'll have wished that you didn't expect your publisher to do anything. And you will have wished you'd gotten 10,000 people's hands any way you could. He saved me so much time and agony and frustration because I would have expected my publisher to do the promotion, and the blah, blah, blah. And that's not what they're going to do at the level that I'm at. Just there. So I did a grassroots effort. That's how we got the word out. But I kept in touch with him. I thanked him. Some things happened in between. I invited him to be an assistant at a football game when I was going to be in New York for that same event. I said, you helped me so much. I know he's not a big sports fan, but I said, I have this opportunity to bring an assistant on the field. It's a Giants Cowboys game. I would love to offer that to you. He turned me down. He said he was busy, but he thanked me for it. We talked about it. And then finally, after enough time and effort, I messaged him and I asked him if he would look at the book. And I know he doesn't do that nonstop. And he got back to me pretty same morning and said, send it over. And A couple days later, I had a blurb from Seth Godin. I'm like, wow. You got to be kidding me. How that happened? So we kept in touch, and my kids actually gave him thank you cards in February when I saw him in California, and he took my book up on stage at a Behind the Brand episode and plugged my book.
You had no idea that was coming, right?
No. No, I just gave it to him because our book tour wasn't at bookstores. It was to go around to thank all the people who've helped us with our book. So I got to give it to Pat Flynn and Seth Godin and Aaron Walker and Dan Miller. And, you know, and Seth happened to be out in California when we were there. And I went to the event and, you know, everybody's like, and you have to invest in yourself. It's $250. I'm like, no brainer. Some people are like, what's the ROI? I'm like, what's the ROI? Are you kidding? Who knows what the ROI is? You know, I don't think that way. And I got to give him the book, and he put the book underneath his chair on stage. I'm like, I took a picture of that because I'm like, wow, oh my God, my book's underneath Seth Godin's chair. Little did I know that when I asked a question, because again, I was in the front row and I asked a question, he picked the book up and he said, Vincent, tell us about your book. And I was like, no, that's not what we're here. So that's on YouTube now. So who knows? You just never know. When you invest in the people that help you and you authentically do that, you just don't know what can happen. But if you do that better than yesterday, day after day, this stuff happens.
Well, one final question for you, if you're willing to share. You've hinted at some other things you're working on, membership site, mastermind groups. What's around the corner? What's up ahead that you're excited about? And where can we find out more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, this is it. Like, just like what you're talking about, like, I am not going really wide on a lot of the stuff. We've got the mastermind groups, which right now are full, which is fantastic. We got four of them, and we have the membership site that is slowly, it's invite and application only. We're not looking to blow this thing up. We're looking to bring in the right people that get this. I have no need to blow this thing up. And the Business of Photography Academy, which is for same thing, but specific towards photographers. Those are the two things I'm working on. I even told my mastermind group, I said, hold me accountable on this, because I am a 1,000 idea a day guy. And if you know me in August, like, no, we're going to do this now. Like, no, I need to just focus on this and make this better and serve these people. That's what people don't get. If you serve your people well, small number, they will talk about you. Right before we got on this call, I got a guy that's in my business photography. He goes, I got somebody for you that needs your. That's how it works. People will talk about you if you do this work for them. And I think so many people get caught up in how do I make this bigger, faster, that they lose that intimacy from the actual people that they're helping.
Well, the title of the book, again, is called Freelance to Freedom, The Roadmap for Creating a Side Business to Achieve Financial, Time, and Life Freedom. Vincent, thank you so much for being our guest today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, buddy. This was awesome.
As always, links and resources to the books Vincent and I discussed can be found at the page created just for this episode. You'll find that at readtoleadpodcast.com/223 for episode 223. Thank you to both Mark Deal and S. James, recent 5-star ratings and reviewers in iTunes. S. James calls the podcast truly inspired. Mark says he's an avid listener. Thank you to you both. If you'd like to leave a rating and review in iTunes, you can go to readtoleadpodcast.com/iTunes to do that. You know, something I don't often mention here on the podcast, but realize I probably should mention more often, is the occasional conference I'm attending and or speaking at. In case you might be attending that same conference, and we can take advantage of our proximity and maybe get together for coffee or what have you. I just got together with a Read to Lead listener last week for coffee, as a matter of fact. I'm going to be at a conference in October 2018 in Columbus, Ohio. It's a conference put on by my friend Carrie Oberbrunner, and it's called the Igniting Souls Conference. I'll be a speaker at that conference. It's designed primarily for authors, but suffice it to say, whether or not you intend to be an author at any point in the future, it's a chance to be in the same room and rub shoulders with some awesome people for a few days. And like I said, I would love to meet you. Now, early bird rates for this conference are in effect until July 11th, 2018. So if you're hearing this before July 11th, 2018, you can still take advantage of that early bird price. Just go to readtoleadpodcast.com/souls, S-O-U-L-S. That's readtoleadpodcast.com/souls for tickets to the Igniting Souls Conference. Don't forget, Chandler Bolt wants to send you a free copy of his book published. You get it just for registering for his free training, readtoleadpodcast.com/published. And if you currently run a business or are planning to start one, remember not to attempt it without incorporating cloud accounting software, FreshBooks. Find out more about them at freshbooks.com/readtolead. Well, that does it for this week. I look forward to seeing you next time. Until then, remember, leaders read and readers lead.